merit employee and therefore had career employee status. The district court found Lavani had received all the due process to which he was entitled. But what Lavani received was the due process for a 1996 temporary employee at Cook County, not the due process that he was entitled to under the HHGC. The district court did not listen to your mandate that, like the security guards in Karsten, Lavani was entitled to the benefits of the HHGC regulations that Cook County ignored.
But let me ask you this. If we agree with you that your client didn't receive procedural due process, given the fact that the jury found you were not terminated, or he was not terminated for cause, what would your remedy be? What would be the relief you'd be seeking from us?
Sure. With respect to the due process claim, Mr. Lavani was entitled to a pre-hearing termination as to whether or not he was given all the due process that he was entitled to under the HHGC regulations.
I understand that, and okay. I'm saying we'll give you that. Let's say that he wasn't given that due process. The fact of the matter is the jury found that he was not terminated for cause. So, I mean, ultimately, what's the harm, or what should your remedy be?
Sure.
I mean, he could have that hearing, okay, and then after that, where do we go from there, given what happened with everybody else and the fact that the jury said he wasn't terminated for cause?
That's a good question, Your Honor, and what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to separate out the two for a moment, and I'll come back to them. But under the HHGC regulations, there's a question as to where layoffs provided for under that. Remember, like the security guards in Karsten, he isn't to be treated as a temporary employee. He isn't to be treated under the rules that were in effect in 1996. He's entitled to the benefits of whatever was in effect under the HHGC rules when the HHGC was turned over to Cook County. Now, what were those rules? We don't know.
Well, could I
sure.
maybe get at this question in a somewhat different way? The jury is given this equation, as it were, that if he was terminated for cause, then it was individualized, and if he wasn't terminated for cause, then it's just a RIF. And I understood you to be saying, well, there was a third possibility, which is the RIF itself was a bona fide reduction in force. But in the context, there was something specific about Mr. Lalvani. So that's one, that's kind of a merits point. Then I thought you were also saying that if he had gotten the proper due process for the career employees, he would have been entitled to certain bumping rights and other job rights that they chose not to give him because they never explored his status properly, and that was the remedy he was looking for now. Is that right?
I think there's two questions there, Your Honor. First goes to the issue of the jury, and the jury. Let me shift to the jury instructions for just a moment. Under the jury instructions, and we received the instructions that we've placed in front of you that we're contesting. We received those jury instructions as it shows in the transcript. We received those jury instructions on the day of the closing argument. Those jury instructions were given out by the district court after the district court had heard all of the testimony from everyone. So he had already heard Mr. Lavani testify that he was not discharged because he did anything wrong. He had heard Mr. Lavani testify that he was not discharged for cause. Nevertheless, he gave out this instruction. Now, could he have clarified it?
In light of our earlier opinion, what exactly is the best way to put to the jury the point that you wanted Mr. Lalvani to make?
To the jury, it was whether or not the decision was, and you'll pardon this, the decision was an individualized decision by Mr. Coleman. But when we sit there and we throw
up the word... But an individualized decision, not because there was some flaw in Mr. Lalvani's work, but instead just because he decided he didn't like Mr. I mean, you know...
Yes, Your Honor, and we put forth a number of other things that would go out and would explain how you got to an individualized decision.
Because, of course, this is not, at this stage of the game, a discrimination case.
No, it is not,
that.
Your Honor.
Yeah, right.
What was involved here was a budget. We aren't and we're talking about a Cook County government budget in which an open position counted as just as much of a reduction as a position that was filled by an employee. And all of the testimony is that Mr. Coleman himself, now he went and talked to Ms. Munoz, but he was instructed he was to make the decision, and he did, that Mr. Coleman himself made the decision that he was going to terminate Mr. Lalvani and Ms. Saliga instead of terminating any of those open positions. Now that is an individualized decision to pick on one person or another. We believe that should have been explained. What an individualized decision is should have been explained further, especially...
Did you submit an instruction in that regard?
Yes, I did, Your Honor. In our brief with respect to the instructions, we submitted... if you find that Robert Coleman could have eliminated...
What page are you on?
I'm on page A18.
Number
11.
12.
Number
12.
If you find that Robert Coleman could have eliminated open positions in order to meet his budget, then you should find that Coleman made an individualized decision to terminate the plaintiff. Again, I say that this is in the context of jury instructions and verdict forms coming out after all the testimony is in. And again, that jury instruction specifically tells the jury that if you find he was terminated for cause, he loses.
And on what grounds did the district court, just remind me, reject that instruction?
Your Honor, I don't recall. He just said, I'm not going to give those. I'm going to come up with, I'm not going to give the counties. I'm not going to give yours. I'm going to come up with my own, and those are the ones I'm going to give. Now, we've already talked about how the closing argument, or we've already put in our brief how the closing argument took place. We believe that had the jury been given a more expansive...
Can we just go back,
sure,
to the instruction?
Yes, ma'am.
The court said, in order for the plaintiff to establish he was terminated for cause, he must show by a preponderance that he was discharged as a result of an individualized decision concerning him and not as a result of organizational demands of a reduction in force instituted by Cook County Hospital.
Yes, ma'am.
What more would you have added to that?
I would have added what I have, which are various definitions of what an individualized decision is. When you say to somebody, well, it's not an individualized decision. Well, what is an individualized decision?
Well,
and that's
well, also,
in light
what's
of
for cause? I mean, do you think the jury knew that for cause meant that only if they believed that Mr. Lalvani's performance, for example, had been attacked, or his attendance, or what have you? Is that what they understood for cause to be?
I think in light of the jury instructions, the jury instructions at the top of the page that... Judge Williams just read on the top of page A13,
mm-hmm,
in order for the plaintiff to establish that county deprived plaintiff of property without due process, he must show by a preponderance of the evidence that B, he was terminated for cause.
So it puts him in the position of showing I was terminated because they thought at least I was a bad worker.
He's already testified he wasn't terminated for cause at the
right
time this instruction comes out without any further clarification, Your Honor. And I believe that it's virtually impossible without more for a jury to say, well, Lordy, what's an individualized decision?
Let me just ask you one other thing. Once the court said these are the instructions I'm going to give, did you suggest any additional language for the court to define cause or to further clarify things or to perhaps show various factors that the jury could have considered.
Your Honor, I objected to these instructions on the basis that they were improper and unfair.
And, okay, but generally, but didn't give him any further.
I had already given him those other instructions.
I understand, but
Your Honor.
You could have also suggested, I'm just asking whether you suggested specific language once he came out with it. His, because it's not unusual that a court would look at both sides' instructions and say, I'm not going to give these instructions, I'm going to put together my own instructions and then pull some from each side. And so I was just asking, after that occurred, did you try to get more specific than your general objection that they were unfair and give him some additional language? And
Your Honor,
answer is no.
Your Honor, my answer is I don't recall. I
okay.
don't believe so, but I
All
truly
right.
don't recall, and I'd have to go back and look. Again, Your Honor, I believe that in each of the cases that have talked about RIFs, they have all said that in each RIF situation, the county followed the HHGC rules to get to the point where they terminated the individual. Here, there is no evidence at all that the county followed the HHGC rules and regulations to get to the RIF. And therefore, I believe we should mandate back to the court that it should hold a hearing and determine that Mr. Lavani's due process rights were denied and reinstated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wharton. Mr. Blanchard.
Good morning. May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Patrick Blanchard. I represent the County of Cook and Robert Coleman, the director of the Department of Social Work at Cook County Hospital, now known as the Stroger Hospital of Cook County. As an initial matter, I'd like to point out that Director Coleman now is no longer a party to this case. Counsel has admitted in his papers that the judgment in favor of Director Coleman is not part of it whatsoever. Now, turning our attention back to Lavani number one, this court made it painfully clear what the guidelines the district court was expected to follow.
Well,
in the
apparently response. Not clear enough, I have to say, because the district, there was, in fact, the briefs quote a question that Judge Williams had posed in the earlier argument, and that possibility doesn't seem to be captured in the court's instructions, because if Lavani was picked on, if I can put it that way, in an individualized way, maybe that's not the same thing as a discharge, quote, for cause, but it's not the same thing as saying, you know, all people who've worked here for more than 10 years are going to be laid off or whatever. I mean, I'm sort of pulling off some sort of very broad criterion. The question posed, the jury could have answered that second question two ways. One, that it wasn't individualized in the sense that it was just this general riff, but two, it wasn't individualized because, or that it was individualized. They were never given the opportunity to say it was individualized because Coleman just wanted to get rid of Lavani. The riff, a bona fide riff, was in place, but here was an opportunity, so instead of shutting down the open positions, he terminates Lavani and his colleague. How does the jury get to that second possibility under the instructions given?
Well, Judge, if I may, that is a good question, and that takes about 5 days of testimony to wrap up, because that's what this trial is all about.
But how, under the instructions given by the court, how is the jury supposed to communicate that view?
I think Judge Wood, that instruction number 6 and instruction number 8, the ones that we're talking about now, do just that, because there's three
but
concepts.
But it's not for cause in the sense of a flawed performance in this instance, but it is individualized. There's a difference in this, is what I'm trying to suggest.
Certainly, I understand, and maybe I can use the plaintiff's proposed number 12 in A18 that you talked about a couple minutes ago to demonstrate my point. The three concepts that were at play were the for cause, the individualized decision about whom to fire, and also the interest of the institution as a whole to meet its mandate in connection with the budget. Now, what the plaintiff tried to do by proposing that number 12 that we looked at a second ago was to attempt to merge the two issues of individualized decision-making.
I would have said just the opposite. I would have said that what the court did is it merged the individualized decision-making thought with the for-cause thought in a way that's counterintuitive, and that the plaintiff was trying to dissect them out and make it clear to the jury, as you just said, and I think is right, that there are three different concepts out mm-hmm. here.
Well, I agree with you, Judge. I believe that the district court did group the individualized...
Didn't that create a terrible ambiguity in the jury instruction?
No, I don't think so, because during the course of the trial, there's quite a bit of evidence to demonstrate,
to
number 12.
Evidence, but let's look at what the jury was told to make of this evidence. How was the jury told to respond to it?
Well, I think in instruction number 8, the distinction between those three elements is at play. The individualized decision... with regard to whom to fire, would be in contrast with
and
the budgetary consideration.
Excuse me a second. Where is instruction number 8? Is it in the appendix, or is it appended to your brief at all?
I'm looking...
Because the only thing in the appellant's brief is that I see are 1 to 4, if you're talking about the court's instructions, or were you referring to the plaintiff's proposed?
Well, the plaintiff's proposed instruction
okay.
is A18,
but
the jury instruction...
Number 4 for the court, this is why I think it's so confusing. This is at Appendix A13, says, in order for plaintiff to establish that he was terminated for cause, he must show by a preponderance of the evidence that he was discharged the result of an individualized decision concerning him and not as a result of the organizational demands. But built into that are two potential kinds of individualized decisions. One, you know, he's just kind of singled out, or two, in the more conventional sense of the term, he was terminated for cause. And that's where so much is folded into that language that I'm afraid the jury wouldn't have known how to express this third possibility that we're talking about.
Well, there is a lot of information. A lot of information is contained in number 8. And Judge Williams, that's on page 11 of our brief, instruction number 8. But I believe it's very accurately portrayed in there. The jury did make a determination that Lalvani was not terminated because of any for-cause issues, and the jury also considered a plethora of information presented them about why the department...
But he himself had testified he wasn't terminated for cause. He testified that he's terminated because he's singled out for unfavorable treatment.
He did. That's part of the case.
You know, isn't that... I don't know. It's very... troublesome, since you don't seem to disagree that our opinion acknowledged that the individualized decision would be a problematic one, but under these instructions, I don't know how the jury can get there.
Well, I agree with you absolutely that under your opinion, as the district court interpreted it, the individualized aspect and the for cause stand over here, and over here.
But they're two different things.
Yes, they are.
And where is the jury told that?
In instruction number 8. I think that's what this court would have to look at to find the answer to that question. And in instruction number 8, when considered in the context of the testimony in this case, the 5 days of testimony, the jury had an adequate opportunity to come to the decision it did. Just so I can supply you with some of that evidence that the jury considered on that point, Director Coleman and Andrea Munoz, who was the associate administrator at Cook County Hospital back in 1996, testified to the changes at the hospital beginning in 1991 and specifically with regard to the Department of Social Work. Those changes caused the reductions in force that were in 1996, but actually preceded that, went all the way back to 1991.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you for a second that if mm-hmm. the right instructions had been given to the jury, a mm-hmm. rational jury on this factual record might have decided that this is all about just an ordinary riff. I mean, I think our concern is with the question whether the jury was successfully asked the right questions, and we've already talked about that. I wonder, though, if you could turn for a moment, because in the alternative, the judge also expresses the opinion that this little exchange of letters, some of which didn't elicit a response, counted as due process, and I'm very concerned about that holding as well in this case, that when you write a letter to somebody and the person never answers, mm-hmm. that's your due process shot.
Well, Your Honor, the court did find that those letters did constitute due process, and under the facts of this case, they were sufficient process.
But how can that be? I mean, yeah. Seriously.
Well, this is an interesting situation.
That's the same as a for cause. That's not what you give employees who are entitled to job protection.
Yes, particularly when we say in the opinion at the last page, a letter Levani received did not meet even the minimal standards that apply when a post-termination procedure is available.
Keep in mind, Judge, this is an interesting case in this regard. In 1996, when the plaintiff was ripped, he believed that he was holding on to some residual due process rights that existed back in the 70s. That's the merit protection system. Now, when this court remanded this case in 2002, the focus of the case shifted a great deal back to the 1970s. I was actually able to come up with a copy of those merit board or those merit system rules and regulations. We sought to admit those at the trial court through a motion in limine. The court denied that, believing that those merit system rules should have been produced before this court back in 2000. So Mr. Wirthwein is somewhat incorrect that there are rules out there. There are rules that we tried to proffer in the district court to show what rules were in place in the 1970s.
But isn't that beside the point? There is a constitutional dimension to this case, which involves the application of the Matthews against Eldridge test. For all I know, your rules in 1976 didn't meet that test. Maybe they amply met it. Maybe they exceeded it. But the question for us right now is whether the process Mr. Lalvani was given was adequate for the due process interest of somebody with the kind of job protection that we found following Carson he had.
Now, keep in mind, Judge, and we shall be aware of this, Carson was a 1992 opinion,
right.
And there was an ordinance that was enacted later in that year in 1992 that we believe divested Mr. Lalvani of any property interest.
But we ruled against you on that point.
I don't think that the ordinance was brought to your attention the last time we were before you. We tried to advance application of the 1992 ordinance in the district court.
I think it's too late in the day to say that Mr. Lalvani didn't have job protection.
And then, notwithstanding that, in 1996, when Mr. Lalvani tried to invoke or ask certain questions about what rights he did have, he asked the questions, or the December 7th letter told him that if you have any questions, you contact us. December 13th, he issued a letter asking for questions. December 23rd, the county responded to him and said, you're not civil service protected.
Said, you have nothing. That was their response. And that, we said in our first opinion, was wrong.
Well, I don't believe you said it was wrong. In fact, I think Ms. Penn, who wrote the letter on December 23rd, 1996, was, in fact, dead on. She did
Why
not have
Why is
any
nothing this, the amount of due process that somebody's entitled to under Matthews against Eldridge?
Well, the due process is the exchange that transpired during the back and forth
he
letter writing.
He never had an opportunity
December.
Even to present his argument that he was in fact entitled to protection.
Excuse me.
There was never an administrative hearing at which he had a chance to ventilate this issue about the backs and forths of the organization of the Cook County Hospital that we looked at.
That's correct. Absolutely. And our position is that in this particular situation and situations that take place virtually every day across the country, that hearings are not required.
Due process, is at least in a post-termination sense, obviously pre-termination, post-termination is a serious issue, but every case I can find shows that there is some opportunity to explore these issues, if you will, to nip these kinds of problems in the bud and not be here a decade later, you know, at the Court of Appeals
trying to sort
them out.
That's true. And the process here again, and the district court identified it, was four letters in December where the questions were asked and the answers were given. They were not answers that Mr. Lalvani liked, but whether sitting in Ms. Penn's shoes in 1996 or standing here today, she was right. He did not have any protected interest under the merit rules, under the 1992 ordinance, under the statutes that form the basis for count 4 or 5 of the plaintiff's amended complaint filed in September 1998. He just wasn't entitled to anything. Now the district court.
And how do you square that with our first opinion?
Well,
I just am stunned. Maybe that's what she thought at the time, but I'm very surprised that you're standing here saying that.
Well, I hope we're on the same page, Judge Wood.
I don't think so,
very possibly not. The process that you were looking for back when you wrote your first opinion was the process that the district court examined in connection with those letters. And the district court took the determination of the jury findings and the facts that were issued at court at trial and determined that the level of process necessary to satisfy the Matthews versus Eldridge flexible approach was satisfied by those four letters.
And that, at least, is a finding you would agree this court will review de novo, the finding of law.
To the extent the Constitution requires. Well, it's a mixed question. To the extent that...
Which means we'll review de novo since it deals with the Constitution.
To the extent that the plaintiff is questioning the jury findings, we believe that the standard of review would be a little bit more stringent than that.
But I wasn't saying the jury findings, I'm saying the amount of process. Was the amount of process he got something that satisfied the constitutional standard? Surely that's a question of law.
Well,
the district court treated it as a question of law. He said, okay, fine, I'll ask the jury these things, but not...
But the district court did consider evidentiary issues that were presented to him during the trial, and also took the jury findings on the two significant questions about the merit protection and the for cause issue. So to challenge that would be challenging essentially the jury findings. Your Honors, if there's no more questions, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. It's worth the time.
I'm sure whatever it is I'll be able to do in 2 minutes, Your Honors. Cook County has always treated Mr. Labonte as if he had no more than temporary status for this case. But prior to that, they've always treated him as if he had more than that, as if he was some kind of employee that had real status, real civil service status, or they would have terminated him or could have terminated him, or that he had supervisory status so that they could have terminated him. But here they come in and say, no, he only has temporary status, and that's how they treat him. In the cases that were decided in the Illinois court, in Altman, at page 504, they say, the commission provided for a hearing allowing laid-off employees to challenge the procedure for layoffs. This is prior to the layoff. The statute requires no more. And then they wanted to challenge after, and that's what Altman is about. But in this case, the commission provided for a hearing allowing these laid-off employees to challenge. And that's what we are arguing today should have happened under this due process that the district court took under advisement and ruled on, that he should have looked at whether or not Mr. Labonte, under the HHGC rules, received his hearing. Now, all these cases that go into layoff talk about it after the layoff has occurred. Here, there should be a pre-termination hearing to determine whether or not he received that due process. And frankly, since there's no evidence as to what those rules were, and it's up to the county can't come forward and present any evidence that they gave him the due process that he was required to receive under the HHGC rules. And we believe this court should mandate that Mr. Labonte be reinstated because there's nothing that they can show that they didn't violate his due process. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Worthen. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.